Hello and welcome to The Inner Gamer, episode 181. We are your weekly dose of video game news, reviews, opinions, and discussions made for and by our listeners. My name is Brett Yanosky.
And I'm Austin Morales. And this week on the latest Inner Gamer cast, we jump into No Man's Sky's next update and Sleep Tight on the Switch. And in the gaming news, London Spitfire wins the first Overwatch League finals, and Motion Twins has no bosses, pays everyone the same, and much, much more. And then finally, in the discussion topic, we talk about the complexity behind the in-game distribution on Steam, on the Apple App Store, on other places. It's kind of a mess.
All the things.
But you'll hear more right here on The Inner Gamer. So, cue the music.
Welcome to The Inner Gamer.
It is July 31st, 2018. Welcome to the Inner Gamer Podcast. If you enjoy this podcast, we'd love for you to support us on Patreon for as little as $12 a year. You can make this podcast better, and we'll give you some great goodies along the way, such as an invite to our Discord channel. You can submit a discussion topic for our third segment of the podcast, and ultimately you just get to be part of an exciting and fun, welcoming community. So we'd love for you to go to patreon.com/innergamer and contribute whatever you'd like to contribute. Now let's jump into the games we played. Austin, No Man's Sky came out a couple years ago, and it was a great spectacle of amazingness.
Great preface.
And then it was garbage.
It was complete garbage.
Total garbage.
We had a friend who was on this podcast. Name's Luis. I won't give away his last name, but he was all about this game.
Yeah.
And I was like, I am too, but I have reservations about it, but I'm excited to see what it's about. So I jumped in. I was like, okay, it can't be that bad. At the time, I was a little younger. I was easily led along with these great captions of like, fly anywhere you want, meet anyone you want, do whatever you want. Fighting these gigantic battles with different factions, you know, and here I'm like piecing together different games, like different aspects of certain games that I've played, and like putting them all together. I'm like, oh my God, this does sound pretty freaking awesome. So jump in, and it is not even a shell. It is like crumbs of what they were rolling it out to be.
Yeah.
And it was pretty sad. So apparently I played about 7 hours of that, and I eventually was just like, you know what? So I'm taking it back. I don't know if I sold it back or I actually got a refund. Because I remember Sony was like...
Did you get a GameStop or did you buy it somewhere
I think
else?
I got a GameStop. Okay. Yeah. I might have got it somewhere else.
You got it digitally. I think you could return
it. I didn't get it digitally.
I don't know if that works, but...
I didn't get it digitally. But yeah, it was pretty bad. You can go listen to our original review of it earlier on in the archives of our podcast. But now we're here. What is that? 2016?
Yeah, it was 2016.
2018. Almost 2 years later, and they have rolled out a gigantic update, but I don't even know how gigantic it is, because I know they've been, there was one update that released like a year later, right?
So they had, Atlas Rises came out about a year later, and Atlas Rises brought out things like base building, where you could actually go around and like build your own base, and it added a lot more capabilities to just, you know, more diversity, where you could like kind of, add to the survival aspect of the game,
right?
And build up stuff, and they had a lot of flexibility with that. But it was, you couldn't build everywhere. There was like limitations in where you could build. Now with this new update, you can actually like, you can build underwater, you can build up in the sky, I guess, or up on like floating things or something. Apparently, you have a lot more capabilities of where you can build, and this is just like a huge overhaul. Everything that they promised originally, they've actually mostly delivered on now. Multiplayer, four-player multiplayer. So you can have like all your friends come in and play. You can build anywhere. There's like actual NPCs that have conversations with you that aren't just like one person that doesn't really have much depth to the character. But anyway, I haven't played as much as you have. So
yes,
continue.
Yeah. Quiet, Brett. Quiet. So... I ended up starting a new game because I was like, I jumped into my old save. I'm like, I have no idea what I'm doing. I'm pressing buttons. Nothing's working right now. So load up the new game. And I remember clearly when I first loaded up No Man's Sky, when it first released, I was on this barren planet. You know, the lighting wasn't that great. You know, there wasn't a lot of plants or anything. There are some creatures and they look really weird. And I was just like super unimpressed. And I think, I forget how the missions went. I mean, I know you had to go like travel somewhere and get some stuff and then come back and then build your ship. And yeah, it's basically the same when I started in this time, but obviously they've done this and made it really freaking awesome. So you come in and the camera pans around and you see the whole world and it's super diverse with all its like hills and stuff, vegetation for miles.
Yeah. Like it's not, I mean, before the procedural generation was very, bland, but now it seems like there's actually like some like the machines, it's not, it doesn't look like a machine's like creating this world. It's like there was some like actual like design that went into like where the things are located. No, it wasn't, it's still procedurally generated, but they made the system smarter.
So like it looks 10 times better. I mean, I would even say it looks 100 times better. Than it did
there's
before.
A graphical upgrade too, so they also improved the graphics over time.
So not only is the land covered with a bunch of stuff that actually looks legitimately like real terrain, like the sky looks 10 times better, and then the clouds look kind of weird, but they move across the sky really quickly, just to like, you know, because time's quicker in the game in order to get that whole day and night cycle.
Yeah.
But I mean, even just looking out for miles, like I have photos. I wish I would not delete them, but taking them off my PlayStation to show you guys. But I was just like in awe of what I was looking at. I still feel like the controls are clunky. Like I do not like them at all.
Yeah.
Like I can use them, but I don't like them. That's just, I guess it's just a smaller nitpick. Some people, I'm sure they don't care. I'm more of a first person shooter guy. So, when I started my new save, I was in third person.
Yeah. So curious about that. Like, so did you start the regular save first? Like, did you play from where you left off?
Yeah. Yeah.
Were you in first person?
I was in
there?
First person. Yes.
Okay. So I'm trying to figure out now how do I switch to first, like third person, because I couldn't find anywhere.
Yeah. I don't know.
I'm like, what the heck? Cause I can't do that.
Right.
It's weird.
I'm sure there's a way.
Third person view.
I do. Yeah. It's nice to see like your character. You actually have something.
Especially when you can like
look
put
at
armor on it and stuff like that.
Right.
You know, change what it looks
like. Yeah. It looks cool. I don't know. I still like first person. Anyway, it just seems like they've really refined the gaming from a visual standpoint, obviously. I think that's what they're going for anyway.
Oh, yeah.
And then from what I remember, there used to be a lot of different materials that you can gather and use for different stuff, like different things for your guns and stuff. But now they kind of refine it where it's like a few materials that you can get. And with those materials allow you to build things with.
Yeah.
So
it's like more crafting.
It's like
stuff.
Carbon, oxygen, ferrite, copper somewhere, pyrite, and there's some other stuff. So there's sodium, chlorine.
Yeah.
Did I say hydrogen?
Yeah, no.
Okay. Well, like that's basically all you need to make everything you need. But the cool thing now is they have these three module, like, I want to say consumables, like things that you can put down and pick up. So you build them once and you have them for life. So they have a refiner. So you can build a refiner, set it down, put things in that refiner to like, if I have pyrite and I put it through this refiner, it makes refined pyrite, which I need for to make other things.
Oh, gotcha.
If I put salt in it, it will come out with chlorine. So we'll refine it to chlorine. So I was like, this is an interesting way of kind of taking all of that stuff that you can find in the world and then just simplifying it.
Yeah.
It's like, I'm going to get all this and now I can refine it to certain stuff. Cause now they have like rusted metal and I can turn that into, I think it's pyrite or something like that. Like some other material. I also have it was like a beacon thing that you can put down. I think it helps you save. I think it's just a save point.
Yeah, the save point. And then there's a teleporter too that I think will let you like teleport to different areas. Like
really?
So
I
like
know that. I didn't see that
when
in there.
You build your base, you can use that as like
The last thing is the base
spot.
Computer.
And then when you then you know, you can like set up teleporters that let you like teleport to different locations. So like for example, I know that I have an ability. I believe I have an ability now where I can like teleport back to like my ship, like the big like transport ship or something like that. I think
that's cool. Big transport ship.
Yeah, like where I've like first discovered like a a spot where I can trade and do all that stuff with like the NPCs.
That's cool.
So there's that in there, but you play multiplayer. So I'm curious what your thoughts were. You played briefly. So like,
I did
like,
well, not briefly. It was about a few hours. Yeah.
So how was it? How was that system?
It was super easy. Since I started a new game, one of our Patreon supporters, Dane, he was playing with us and he also came on this podcast because he's a Patreon supporter.
Heck yeah.
I was just like, hey man, come on in and, you know, join my game. And it was super easy. Cause when you first start up the game, you have, for lack of what it's actually called, it's called like free play, you know, just jump into the world and you'll see other people as you fly around, or you can join up on random people or your friends on the second option. So he did that. He spawned in. Well, this is my experience. When I joined him, I spawned in outside the world that he was on. So I assumed that's how he did it for me. And then you just warp in, you find your person, land your ship, and you guys are just working together. Like, it's that easy. Yeah. And I was like, man, within 5 minutes, well, 3 minutes, I guess. I still feel like traveling is takes too long.
Yeah, it's so, you know about the boost and stuff, right?
Yeah, okay.
Because like that speeds up the process. Then you have like the hyper or like the overdrive or whatever that like makes you move super fast.
Yeah.
So you have like three speeds, and then eventually you can like, you know, what is it, like teleport, hyper light drifter style thing. That's not hyper light drifter, whatever it's
you
called.
You mean your hyperdrive?
There's like four. Yeah, the hyperdrive.
Yeah.
Yeah, because there's like four settings you
there's
can
four,
do. Yeah,
it's there's still boost. Does. There's like super boost, and then there's hyperdrive.
It still does take a while though for some places. I have
it's
one
like a
place.
Minute and a half, 2 minutes, but even that feels like forever.
Yeah. Yeah, because it starts out like you'll be there in 14 hours.
Yeah.
And then you like move faster and you're like, okay, I'll be there in six. 14 minutes. And you'll be there in 3 minutes. And that 3 minutes takes forever.
It does.
Like,
it does.
I'm flying. When am I going to get there? And then I start flying through asteroids. I'm like, I don't want to hit anything. But then you arrive and it's great.
Yeah. No, it's pretty sweet.
It's awesome.
I've been enjoying it. And that whole thing where we're running around and like can, you know, base build, which I'm curious if it's going to be kind of like Fallout 76. Because they're saying that in Fallout 76, you can put down this module that allows you to build anywhere. So you can take your base literally anywhere. I'm hoping that's the same thing here. I haven't done the research and I have not explored it yet in the game. But that'd be nice if you could take your base module with you and then set it down somewhere else.
So I think you can, because if you join another player's game, your base won't be there, but you can like place it there in that world.
Mm.
So I think you can,
depending on who you join on.
Yeah, like depending on who you join on, like you
that
have
makes
that
sense.
Base.
Right.
I think you can build multiple bases if I remember correctly. Cause like from what I was listening to, somebody on YouTube, and they were talking about how they put bases in different ships or in different planets. So they can like, they know like this planet has X resource. So they built a base there. So then they can then travel back to that fast and, get that, whatever that mineral is or whatever.
Right.
But I don't know. I'm really excited to jump back into it because I did enjoy the game despite like the negative responses it had. It's just that it was just a barren world, but I like the, like, you know, I'm a hater of inventory management, but in this game, like there's some weird appeal to the inventory.
It's cause it's space, man. You just love
it.
Space
is just cause
stuff.
It's space. I love space. I don't want to manage like freaking, what do you call it? Like arrowheads and shit. I want to manage
pixie dust,
like carbon
fairy
and
carcasses.
Minerals and things. Yeah. It's awesome. Anyway, so.
Okay, so negative stuff real quick.
Yes.
So with the negative things, there was terrain popping all over the place constantly. It still looks kind of crappy from afar, like when you're up in the sky.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it takes a little while. As you get closer, it loads more. And then there was some lag. And the first time I loaded it up the other day, it crashed on me.
I was like,
you fucking kidding me. Now, I don't know if the lag is due to me having super sampling on, which it might be, but I mean,
it's very possible.
I just feel like this game is still fucking buggy as hell. And I don't know how I think the PlayStation's barely hanging on because there's some points where it freezes, not for very long, but then it comes back and I can still play.
Yeah.
But I'm just like on my computer, on my PC, like if it freezes, I know I'm fucked, you know? So I'm always like, come back. Okay, it's back. We're good. We're safe.
Right.
But
right.
I'm just kind of annoyed that it still does that.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
I get the technology involved can't be that low key. Like I'm pretty sure it's pretty like high level shit.
Oh yeah.
Different planets, different stuff.
Yeah. Well, all that stuff's like all the procedural generation on the planets is done by mathematical equations. So it's like,
yeah, it's crazy.
Having to
that's crazy.
Do math as you're approaching a planet. Like, I don't know how, like when it does that, like if you enter into the world and like all of a sudden, like as you're loading the game, it's like doing all the math to load the world. But now the world is the same for everybody. So like it must have just been like they set up a program that just like created these worlds. And then now people, I wonder what happened. Like those that discovered planets in pre-Next and are now playing it post-Next, if all those planets remain as is, and like if somebody goes back to a planet that they discovered, will they see, like I would love to see like a before and after of the same planet,
you know what I mean? Yeah.
And get an idea of what it actually, like how much different it looks now.
Right. That'd be interesting. I'm sure someone's done that.
Yeah.
Someone's had to have done that.
There's a billion videos out there. So,
I mean, there's cool. some other stuff. I just lost it, but
yeah,
it's worth jumping back in. I mean, you can go to GameStop and get this for $20. You probably get it for $15 used. So I got mine. It's actually, if you're a Plus member right now, you can get it for $30 on PlayStation Plus or just on the PlayStation Store with the Plus discount of 55%. So it might be worth it if you and your friends want to jump in. I mean, it's the adult version of Minecraft, I feel like.
Yeah, that's a good...
Not that kids can't play this game, but I'm just saying. That's what it seems like.
It is $28.40 currently on Amazon.
Oh,
so you can get it for $30 on Amazon.com.
But I digitally downloaded it, so how about that?
Oh, there you go. How about that? So,
anyway.
I started a game
that
came out this past week.
Nice.
Called Sleep Tight.
Very nice.
It is a game in which you play a little kid. It's on the Switch. It's a Switch exclusive. And you play a little kid, and this is ultimately a tower defense game in which at night, every night, the monsters come out of the closet
every night
and start to attack you.
On the night.
And you have to defend yourself with dart guns and pillow forts and toy turrets and all the things that kids would have had in their imagination. And it's a very cute game. It's definitely geared towards the kids, but it still can be fun if you're like somebody that enjoys tower defense style games. It's incredibly hard, actually. Like as time goes on, I feel like I never have enough resources because as you're playing through, so you play night by night. So at nighttime, the monsters attack, you fight them off. If you win that wave, the next day you wake up and you can upgrade your room. So you're always in the same level. And this is one of the frustrating things I have about the game is that the level's the same. It's just a big square and it's basically your bedroom and you have like doors on the walls and stuff like that. And you have like a big rug in the middle. And then you have four corners that are different upgrade centers. So you have one corner that is for your health and power-ups. So you can get like an overshield and you can obviously upgrade your health, things of that nature. They have a research center. It allows you to research buffs and abilities that will make your fighting better. You have a weapons and ammo center. So you can buy ammo there. You can buy weapons, things of that nature. So you can get like the dart gun or you can get a Spitfire, which is a rapid fire dart gun. There's a Gatling gun that's a rapid fire, like super rapid fire dart gun. They're all dart. They all use darts. And so that's kind of cool. And then they have another center that's for your building. So you can build, like I mentioned, the pillow walls that are like pillow fort walls that are your defenses, and then you can build turrets of different types and things of that nature in order to progress and defend yourself and protect yourself from these monsters. And there's regular monsters, there's little fast moving monsters, there's big huge Hulk looking monsters. All of them come out, they're all purple and they want to kill you, and you have to defend them off with your dart guns. And it's a very interesting game, but the thing that I didn't like about it is it's a $20 game, and I feel like it needs to have a bit more depth to it. Like,
oh yeah,
if there were some more levels that I could play in that had different diversity and like what it looked like, I think that would help out a lot. They do have different characters. So you start out with one character, and the more you play, the more you like you survive nights. Like after you get 25 nights of surviving, then you unlock this character, or if you survive 45 nights, you'll unlock another character, and they have special perks and abilities that make, I think, it harder but easier to fight off bad guys.
That makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah, but there's a lot of complexity in like the upgrade system, but I feel like I never have enough of the things you need to upgrade because you collect stars. So the stars are when you kill an enemy, they drop off a star and you pick up the stars. So you have to pick up all the stars from all the enemies, and that's a currency. And then you have sun.
You keep sunlight. That even if you die?
Yeah, even if you die. Okay. You do. You also have the... No, actually, don't keep it because you have to start over if you die. You lose the waves and you start from zero and then go back up again. I made it to level 12 or night 12 and then I died. So that was a bummer. But you also get sunlight, and every day you get 8 suns. And then you can use those stars to, like, some things you unlock require sun and stars. Other things require just sun. Other things require just stars. And stars are the only things you acquire in the game. And then every night, you, when you wake up, you get that set 8 pieces of sun. Most of the stuff requires sun. So to repair your forts and stuff from damage, that's 1 sun. To get new ammo, that's 1 sun. To get new health, that's 1 sun. And then to purchase things, that's like a set number of suns. So with 8 suns, you don't really have a lot that you can spend. Like, you have to be very careful about how you spend your money. And a lot of that could be just like repairing your stuff. So, or getting ammo, because you run through ammo like crazy. But it's good and bad. I think it's a delay. Like, that's what I would, if I would rank it. So we have our review system, Ditch Delay. I would say it's probably a delay right now because for the price point, there's not enough content there to, I think, keep people engaged. Because this is something that I think would fit really well as a mobile game. You know, it's like pick it up on a mobile game. It's a twin stick shooter, by the way. So you use both sticks. So it's would be harder to do twin stick on the mobile phone. But it's still difficult on the Switch to keep me engaged for a long period of time.
Yeah, that's what it seemed like.
Yeah. So,
interesting concept. I think it's a great idea.
I do too.
It is a great idea.
Great concept. Really cool mechanics in there. Really great looking art style. I mean, just the idea of you're in a kid's bedroom and you're fighting off monsters that come out of your closet and they made a tower defense game. Like, that's just a cool thing.
I love tower defense. Yeah. Looking at it, I was like, do I really?
I think it would make for a really awesome, I think it would make for a really good two-player game, like two-player couch co-op with a bigger space. So you guys could tag team to build your forts.
Right.
I think that would really send it to the next level and make it better. So hopefully they add updates later on that'll give us that ability.
Right.
Yeah, but yeah, so cool. Sleep tight. That's the game.
Awesome.
Anyway, so that's going to wrap it up for our game segment of the games we played this week. No Man's Sky next, and then Sleep Tight. Next week, we're going to be talking about Octopath Traveler again with our special guest, so stay tuned for that. And we're going to take a quick break and come back with our video game news.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
It is time for our video game news. In this segment, we share the best headlines from the week in the gaming industry. First up, we have Overwatch League has concluded its season 1. The finals have happened. It was Philadelphia versus London, and London Spitfire came out on top. They kicked some butt. They beat out Philadelphia. They won. They got the $1 million prize pool. And what was amazing about this is the first ever Overwatch League finals, right? Never happened before. And they had it at a basketball arena that was 19,000 seats, and it sold out. The esports arena at this basketball stadium sold out 19,000 seats. That was intense. And we had people like John Bon Jovi there, the Brooklyn Nets player D'Angelo Russell,
holy shit,
actress Courtney Miller. And so compared to the standard stadium that you do in California, which had 450 spectators, like, this is a huge upgrade. They even had DJ Khaled or whatever his name is play a opening set and introduce everything. So, man.
This is what I've been saying since... So if you don't know, we're in Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they're building a, I don't know
esports
how many,
arena.
Yeah, I don't know how many millions of dollars esports arena, but it's only going to hold like at the max 2,000 people, I think.
Yeah, it's like 1,500, 2,000.
Like, it's like not that, okay, it's a lot, but it's not that much, okay? Because I've seen some of these major esports events like 5 years ago who are pulling out stadiums worth of people just to watch. And I'm just like, wait a second, you're building a 1,500 seat stadium esports arena for this? Like, in this region of the US, it's actually pretty big. It's a big thing, right? Because we actually have some place to go for this stuff. But I'm just like, man, if we...
Well, it's the biggest in the United States.
Which still blows my mind.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I guess you can just go to an arena that's already built, but I feel like you would want something that for itself. Like, even the Overwatch is building itself an arena, or Blizzard is building itself an esports arena.
Well, they already built it. It's already done.
Oh, is it? But it's still not that big either.
It's 450 seats, yeah. That's a 450 seat one.
Oh, that's a 450 seat one. See, that's just, like, mind-blowing.
Yeah.
I feel like if you want this to be big, you're preparing for it. You already know this is getting bigger and bigger every year. Why not build something that's going to last for multiple years? Yes, now we have a destination in DFW for people to come out and play, which is great. I mean, I think that's still awesome. There's not a lot of negative to the seat factor, but still, I feel like I don't know what they're thinking.
I think it's hard to get the buy-in early because it's still like people are still trying to make the argument that esports is a legit sport. And that's like hard to get people that have the money to invest to say like, okay, yeah, let's invest in a 15,000 seat arena specifically designed for esports. So that's why, like, I think for a while we're going to see these multi-purpose arenas catering to these bigger events like this, because it's, I mean, if you think about it with, you know, even like basketball stadium, like the American Airlines Center here in Dallas doesn't support itself exclusively off of basketball. They host concerts and they host hockey. And I mean, it's like not just basketball, it's basketball, hockey. It's, you know, all these different things that happen there. So it's a multi-purpose arena.
Right.
So I think the fact that we're seeing these like esports arenas popping up, they're holding 1500 seats. Like that's not as unrealistic, because even like the football stadiums, like they're multi-purpose as well. So they cater to obviously the football season, but they also, I mean, they can't just build a football stadium and have it last the entire year.
Right.
But what's cool about these esports arenas is that, like, especially the one in Arlington, is that it's exclusively esports. Number one, it's not going to have any concerts or anything like that, but it's open year round. So you can always go there as a fan and you can play games there and you can interact. And it's going to be a social space for gamers
right.
who want to get in the competitive scene
right.
as well as hosting these big games. So I think in that sense, it's going to be a multi-purpose, and we're going to see that kind of that idea grow as time goes on, because it's just we don't have the buy-in by enough people yet.
Right.
And I think we'll see that shift over time. So,
yeah. Yeah.
So I think it's just the fact for me, like, that you had a 19,000 seat arena sell out, which doesn't even happen with
normal
stuff typically.
Right.
I mean, like, I think I know like the basketball championships, like that probably sells out and stuff like that. So like, yes, in comparison, like they all sell out, but this is esports. This is the first finals for esports.
Yes.
And it's sold
out. It is Overwatch. It is a very popular game. I get that. But this does put a state, like, I would expect them to do a little bit bigger, like 5,000. I could see is like the lowest you would want for an esports arena. And I think this solidifies it. And like I said, I've seen them do this before for other stuff like League of Legends and, you know, I'm sure Dota, StarCraft stuff, like all that stuff just sells out hardcore. You see it overseas too. Like it's even bigger overseas already, you know, I don't know how much bigger. But I would figure people would factor that in. But sometimes I guess we get caught up in a bubble, especially investors who don't know. You just go to them and beg them for money. I don't know. It's going to get bigger. I guarantee you they're going to have to build onto the one here in Arlington for sure. But yeah, moving on.
Awesome. Good stuff. So next story we have is EA is, you know, Battlefield 5 is coming out this year. And we know that Battlefield is going to have Battlefield Royale. That's basically what the name that's come out that they're going to title it. But they are now considering making either spinning off the Battle Royale into a free-to-play standalone shooter to kind of jump off the tails of Fortnite doing that. Or they might leave it as part of it and then make another free-to-play standalone shooter at the end of the year. So Patrick Sutherland, I believe is who it was, said that this is probably not going to happen. No, it wasn't Patrick. It was Andrew Wilson. He said that they were basically, Jorgensen, that's who the guy was. He said they're interested in possibly experimenting with an essentially free to play standalone game that might be in a shooter genre or another genre, but he doesn't think that's how we're looking at the Battlefield stuff right now. So I think they're going to revisit this. And it's interesting because, like, this article is kind of, they never harken back to the fact that EA has done this before with Battlefield Heroes. That was their attempt at a free to play shooter. And it didn't do super well. I mean, it did well, but
just before didn't its last. Time.
But yeah, it was the wrong time. And I think they had potential to make it good because that game was good. I really liked it. I had a blast playing that game. And just never, it just, that wasn't the market at that point in time. But I'm hoping now with where things are, maybe they'll be able to produce something that's a little bit more successful. And we'll see what they do. I mean, I would love to see like a Battlefield Heroes 2. Actually, I would jump on that pretty intensely.
Yeah, I think the way everything's going, I think that game would succeed in this market.
Because think of like everything that they had in it. I mean, it was only Conquest. So like that was probably some of it too. But like it had the same kind of art style. It had the same quirky corniness of it. I mean, it's basically what Fortnite is. You know, that they just like brought it into this. I mean, it just wasn't out at the right time. Because back then, nobody was playing free to play. And that was weird. They don't want to pay microtransactions. They had a bad taste in their mouth for it. Still do. But back then, it was even less common. So it's interesting how things have, you know, kind of changed.
Yeah, no,
but,
for sure.
Anyway, so yeah, any more comments on that one?
No, I'm good.
Okay, cool. So Nintendo Labo. It's a thing that you may or may not have seen or heard of, but Nintendo Labo is the cardboard kit that Nintendo brought out earlier this year that was really, really silly when we first heard about it. And then we started seeing the capabilities that it had and we're like, this is really cool. Cardboard kits that you can basically tear apart and make 3D objects that have interactivity with the gyroscope of the Switch Joy-Cons. They have a new kit that just came out and it's all about vehicles. So I watched a trailer of this and it was really fascinating because you build a steering wheel that's a cardboard steering wheel that rotates and stuff like that. And you stick the Joy-Con in the center of it and it allows you, it detects the motions of the steering. And you have a gas pedal that also has a Joy-Con in it. So when you push the pedal down, it moves the Joy-Con up and down so it can detect that motion and it can determine how much acceleration you're putting in there. So you can drive a car in this 3D game. And then in addition to that, they have two more modes to it that are other physical pieces that you create. One of which is a joystick, like an actual like joystick like you would have in a plane. And you use that to fly around and can fly an airplane with a little joystick. And then they have, you can go in the water. And then you have like controls to control your submarine that you can now go underwater and travel around and like adjust the different like the propeller things that are like pushing you through the water. You can adjust the directions of them so you can like turn and stuff based on how you maneuver it. And it's really, really cool. It's like $70.
I just watched a trailer.
Yeah.
I really dig this.
Right?
This is actually something I'd consider getting.
Yeah.
The game. Okay. So I'm not always a huge fan of like the mixed bag of tricks thing. Like the original Nintendo Labo came out, like you do all this cool stuff, but it's all like very, it's very much like what was that first game that released 1-2 Switch?
Yeah.
Or yeah. Which is like, it's a mixed bag of stuff where nothing's really thought out enough. Same thing with the original Nintendo Labo package, right? You get a bunch of stuff, you can do a lot of different things, but this super focused, it knows what it's doing. And what makes it great is that in the trailer, you see this little, it's basically a key that you put your...
Oh, yeah. I didn't mention the key. You brought that up.
It's a key. You put your one of your Joy-Cons in, and you could stick that in all three things. So if you want to drive the car, you stick it in your car, and it knows you're driving a car. If you want to, you know, go to a boat or submarine, you stick it, or I guess the boat.
Yeah. Or a submarine. It was submarine. It's submersible.
Okay, yeah. So you stick that into your other controller box thing and you use that and you pull it out and put it into the flying one. It's just like, that just makes so much sense. Like, shit, I'm going to change. And it looks kind of like an open world type thing and you could do really cool stuff. Like, one, I show that like you stick a razor blade out and cut down trees, or you can lob bombs and stuff, or go into water and like fish to some degree. It wasn't fishing, but it seemed kind of cool. It's just, it's focused. It knows what it wants. You know what you're getting. And it looks like there's a lot of great content and a lot of replayability in this package.
Box.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it all works together. Like, yeah. I wish they had that in the original Labo where you had like a key that makes you able to start everything. I see why they wouldn't do that. But yeah, I think this, I'm curious to know how successful this will be compared to Nintendo Labo.
Right. I think it's going to be awesome.
You going to buy it?
I'm probably going to buy it.
Sweet.
$70. I want to put together cardboard. Can make a video out of it.
Let's do it.
Watch us.
Let's do it.
building Nintendo Labo sets or Labo. Anyway, so Destiny, we stopped playing Destiny, but they had this thing in Destiny 1 where they had the grimoire cards. Ugh. And in order to read said grimoire cards, which basically gave you the lore of the game, you had to go onto a website or your app and get off of the game that you're playing. Somebody has a distaste for this, obviously. So you had to go into this this app to read all this stuff, right? So they're putting all this stuff into books, and they're making the Destiny Grimoire Anthology. And Volume 1 comes out in the fall, and it's going to be 128 pages. And Bungie announced that it is, quote, a lore compendium designed and assembled for Destiny's devoted and enlightened scholars and lore lovers, as well as fans of fantasy and science fiction storytelling. And this book looks really cool. Like, this is what they should have done in the first place. Like, put this together and then release a collector's edition of the Destiny with this book attached to it. Like, I would have bought that in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah.
Even though I sold the game back, I would have bought that in a heartbeat. And I kind of want to get it just to, like, read what, like, because the story bits are good. Like, they have some really interesting stuff there, but you just don't know what it is because it's so hard to find it. Yeah. And now this is going to let us find it easier and, like, learn about it. Because, like, the lore behind some of these creatures and races is, like, really, really cool, but you just don't know it.
You want to know.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they would have been, well, I probably would have been upset where it's like, you need to buy another thing in order to know more about the game. I don't know why I try to sound like Obama right there. Anyway, yeah, it's cool, you know, after the fact now, I think.
It's going to be $24.99.
That's not bad at all.
Hardback.
That is not bad at all.
Volume 1.
Hmm.
I might get it just put my shelf like back over here somewhere.
Yeah, no, that'd be cool. I mean, I'd be down to read it because some of that stuff is really fascinating.
Yeah,
I feel like.
Yeah. So, next up, Commodore 64. Those of you that have been around, like were alive during the days of the Commodore 64, you'll appreciate this more than I will because I wasn't around during the days of the 64. But I know that there's a huge, huge, huge fascination with the Commodore 64. It kind of has that for a lot of people, like the NES is like their first foray into video games. And then for a lot more people, the Commodore 64 is their first foray into games. Cause this was like this amazing piece of technology back in the day that kind of like blew people's minds. Well, they're making the mini version just like everybody else is with like retro stuff. They're bringing it back. And the Commodore 64 comes out October 9th with 64. Get it? It's Commodore 64, 64 game. Built in games. So it's going to have games such as Pit Stop 2, Speedball 2, Street Sports, Baseball, Temples of Opshai, Trilogy, Iridium, Boulder Dash, things of that nature, none of which I actually know anything about. But it's got some cool features to it. So it's got two USB ports. You can plug in an extra joystick for multiplayer games. You can also connect a keyboard and use the machine as a functional but probably dated home computer. So you can actually use it as a computer, which is pretty awesome.
Wow.
And then you can even use the C64 basic computer programming language to create your own software. So if you want to, you know, make stuff in BASIC like back in the day, you can actually do that with the system and actually like code it on the device, I believe. And you can even find stuff online to make your own games or just like, you know, copy code if you want to do that as well. But it's kind of cool that they're bringing this out and... yeah, I mean, they're everywhere. It's a good way to, if you don't have them, like, they're making them again. And
what's up with retro games, man? Just every Atari, now the Commodore. I mean, what's next? I mean, they're going to have the GameCube stuff eventually come out for Nintendo.
Yeah, they're going to bring out GameCube. Yeah. Well, I mean, there's definitely going to be a Nintendo 64 Mini.
Exactly.
That's coming soon.
Exactly. Sorry, I skipped one. But yeah, this is ridiculous. I didn't grow up with it, so I'm not going to get it, obviously. But, I mean... I am happy people can relive their childhood. I mean, I feel like that's what gaming is mostly about. At least at this point, I'm just like, man,
this thing is so like weird looking, but it's kind of awesome.
It's basically a keyboard with a computer inside, which is crazy.
I might get one just
stick it up back here.
Yeah, yeah.
How much was it again? Does it have a price yet?
I don't think it does actually. Well, I'm sure it does somewhere. It's going to cost money. There you go. That's the price. It's going to cost money. Yeah. So October 9th, we'll find out more later on. There it is. All right. This next story is really interesting. So there's a game called Dead Cells. It's a Switch exclusive. It's about to be available on other devices. It's an 8-bit
It's on Steam Early Access.
It's a Castlevania-inspired roguelike game.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is now. So it was originally exclusive to Switch, and then now it's out on Steam.
Really? I played this on a PC before it was on Switch.
It was Switch exclusive. Yeah.
I wonder if that changed. So I have the demo, or not the demo. We got a code for this game.
Yeah.
On PC, and I played it.
I'm pretty sure it was.
I thought it was Early Access.
For a while. Let's see. I'm going to look it up.
It's a hard-ass game. It is perfect for the Switch, by the way.
It is. It is indeed. You might be right, actually. Let me see. It is currently on Early Access alongside port. Oh, no, you're right. I take that back. Okay. I was wrong. It was Early Access on Microsoft, Windows, Mac OS, and then it had ports to the Switch, PlayStation 4, Xbox One on August 7th of 2018. So it just recently came out. But wait. Oh, it's coming out on the Switch. It hasn't come out yet on the Switch.
Okay.
What? Wait. Okay, I'm totally messed up. Ignore me. Like, cool. I don't know what I'm talking about anymore.
Ignored.
Yeah. So, yeah, you're right. Okay. So, flip-flop that. PC first, now Switch. Anyway, back to what I was
saying. This actual story.
So, Motion Twin is the company that built it, and they have an interesting company culture in that they have no bosses, and they pay everybody exactly the same. They're a small team. They only have about, I think it's 12 or 13 people. So, it works for them. No, I think it's 11. But they're paid the same amount, and people that have been there for, say, 17 years, like some of the people, are paid the same as people who were recruited last year. So that's kind of interesting. Like, I feel like that could create some difficulties with some people, because they're like, oh, well, I have seniority. I've been here longer, and I'm worth more.
Right.
But in their mindset, it's kind of like, I mean, this is a team that's building a game. So the team is all contributing to the game. If they're all contributing well enough, like, they're building something together, so why shouldn't they get paid the same? Because without one piece of the puzzle, like, the game's not going to get built. So it works for them, and they've been in business for nearly 2 decades, and the Dead Cells sold more than 700,000 units on the PC alone before it left Early Access. The fact that they've been in business for 2 decades is pretty crazy with that same concept for that long. I don't know, what do you think about that?
France, I don't know how France does its business over there. But I feel like if I was on for a while, I would probably want to get paid more. Like, if everyone's getting paid base pay, like, there's no reason to stay at that company, you know? It only makes sense to stay there if you're going to, you know, if it was like a side.
Well, like, you're
thinking
in
about
States,
it feels like a the side job.
Is like to move up, you know?
Right. Yeah. This feels like a side job. Like, hey, I'm going to come here, I'll work on some stuff, and I'll just leave, you know? At least you're making some cash while you can. Or it could still be a side job where you just work on whatever you... I mean, I don't know how the whole process of working there is, but I'd feel like you'd work there as a side job if you're just going to get a base pay of, like, I don't know how much, whatever.
They said it's comparable to, like, most average salaries here without before benefits and stuff.
Okay. So, like, what's an average salary in America?
Well, no, for, like, the gaming industry.
Oh, what's an average salary in gaming industry?
I have no idea.
Let's look it up.
You should know that. Now, I would say it's probably, like, 50 or 60. I could see that would be a good rough standpoint. So yeah, but I mean, I think there's something to that, because if you don't have, like, you know, you get hired on, you know, you're gonna get paid something like a set price, like, you know where you're getting into, first of all, and you know that that's like where things are gonna be. So they have to then create the incentive is not based on I want more money. There's different reasons for incentivizing people to work harder. And I'm not exactly sure what that is, but you can actually be a little bit more creative as a business owner, because you can, I mean, you're not, like, people may do something temporarily just to get a pay increase, and they get the pay increase, and then, like, maybe they go back to, like, their old ways or whatever, you know, like, they don't really improve their work quality.
Right.
But they're fighting for that increased pay, and then you don't know what's going to happen after that. In this case, there isn't any of that competition happening. It's just like everybody's there. Like, basically, if you don't produce a good game, you're going to lose your job. And that's kind of the incentive there. But I wonder if there's other incentives that they put in there to help. Maybe it's just that they love making games, and They like just want every game that produce to be better than the previous one.
That's fine. That's awesome.
That could be what works. So,
so I have it here. Average game designer in 2013 made almost 74,000 a year.
Oh, wow.
And then game designers with less than 3 years of experience in 2013 had an average salary of 50,000.
Yeah.
A year.
Sounds about right.
So it's not bad. That is not a bad job.
No.
That is a lot of work and hard effort.
Yeah. I mean, you also have to work like 20,000 hours a week.
But I mean,
doesn't help. Unfortunately.
Exactly. Well, I mean, you're putting your heart and soul into what you love, obviously, video games, right? But you want to do other things too. Like, you got to think about the future. I would not want to be making 50 grand for the rest of my life, potentially. I mean, just like going off of this company. But that's where I'm going to stay the rest of my life. You know, at the very lowest point, 50 grand. 75 might not be bad. 74, whatever. Like, that's actually not too bad. But I mean, I feel like you want to move up. Help your family out, help people out. I mean, if you don't have money, you can't really give back to the poor or anything. And, you know,
I mean, depending on like you mentioned, like depending on how it is in France, like the government structure has a lot to decide on this. Cause like here, like $50,000, $50,000 is actually a good salary to make that's a good living. Like you're doing well, you can afford to put food on your table every night. You can afford a pretty decent house.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that stuff's possible. It's not as possible as it used to be, but it's still, you know, definitely reasonably possible and stuff like that. So like, if you're content with that, like, I mean, there isn't really, like making more money doesn't make anything better other than like, you just have more money to do stuff with, but then you're going to find ways to like use up more of that money, which is not necessarily a good thing.
Yeah. It's balanced everything.
But I think what could be done is that, you know, the more like maybe the incentive could be like, okay, we don't make more money, but instead, like if we do this thing, maybe they get more perks by making more money. So like maybe 1 year they get, you know, paid health insurance when they didn't the year before, or maybe 1 year they get, you know, a refrigerator full of Topo Chico that gets refilled every day. Like that would be a pretty good incentive versus not having that.
Right.
So, you know, there's different things.
Yes, does all around,
you know? Yeah.
So I'm sure they already have that.
I don't know. I think it's interesting, but, it's a good concept, but like they said in here, like it's not a scalable concept. Mm-hmm. Like at 15 people, it's good. It works.
Yeah.
But when you get into like a 50 person team, that you have to have some kind of management to make sure that these, like, you can't have one tier of 50 people that are all working independently and make sure that they're doing the right thing. Cause there's just so many signals are going to get lost. So you need like managers to manage these different teams. I think that helps to, you know, keep things a little more focused in these like pools. So
exactly. I don't know. As a manager himself.
Yeah.
Of sorts. Yeah.
So next question, the last topic we have actually, Microsoft's next Xbox could have a cloud only counterpart. So Xbox talked about at E3 this year that they're going to be doing, they're having a bigger push on cloud gaming. They're going to have a cloud service. So they don't have it yet. Right now they just have the system where you download games, you know, you pay monthly fee, you can download whatever games you want, but they're going to start doing a streaming service. And they have said that the next time they bring out the console family, there may be the conventional system as well as a cloud-only model that's going to work in tandem with the streaming service. It would sell for a lower price, obviously, and it wouldn't have the beefy processing power needed to run everything locally. However, it would also address some of the latency issues that, you know, are plagued by existing services. So I don't know. I see this as the future we're going to get. For sure, but I don't know. I'm curious to see what it's going to look like. Like, mm-hmm. If you have like an Apple TV that does it all, you can have an Apple TV that also streams games. Like, you got everything you need. Like, we're getting towards the future where
were saying this was less than 5 years or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this is literally the streaming thing.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah.
There's no reason to have. I mean, I don't know what it's going to look like, but the hardware is less of a concern. It keeps getting smaller and smaller.
Yeah.
It's happening, guys. Streaming is happening.
Streaming is coming.
Next generation. It's going to be interesting. I mean, I can imagine them having a PS Vita type console for the PlayStation that can still knock out. Well, I mean, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, you have a dock that that can display 4K, and you pull it out and it's 1080p, and you just fucking stream your stuff from there. It just makes sense. I feel like it just makes sense. What will Xbox have? I have no idea.
Yeah. It'll be interesting. I wonder if they're going to go the route of also making it portable too. Like,
can you imagine?
Make a Switch thing where you can like carry, because if it's streaming, you could do that. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, I'm serious. It's just true. But I mean, can you imagine having a PS Vita and an Xbox handheld and a fucking Switch? Someone would need to come out with like the best case ever. That's just like, here's my fucking streaming stuff right here.
That would be hilarious.
Right.
Yeah,
man.
I don't know. It'll be pretty interesting. So yeah, I don't know. I would say we're going to give it a couple years and we're going to see this happening. They're poised to launch this in 2020. So we got 2 years left until the cloud version of Scarlet, as it's codenamed, will release.
It better be red, I swear.
So yeah, I bet we'll see something about it, like a tease at E3 2019. Mm-hmm. And then it'll be unveiled at E3 2020. And then released in the Christmas time of 2020.
Man, that's not that far away, honestly.
No, it's right around the corner.
That's interesting. And when you talk about a tease coming up next year, I'm down.
There we go. All right, so that's going to wrap it up for the video game news we have this week. If there's something that we missed, we want to hear from you. Be sure and email us at hello@theinnergamer.net, and we'll talk about it next week. Also, don't forget, if you like what you hear, please go and give us a review and rating on iTunes. All you have to do is go to the Apple Podcast app, search for us, click on rate a review, leave a review, rate us, let us know. That helps us get found better on the App Store, not the App Store, the Apple Podcast Store.
Yes, please.
So we'd love to have that happen and give us a little boost.
Go
now. If you
don't
want to give us Patreon contributions, you can contribute this way and we would still love you.
So
do that. And we'll be back after the break with our discussion topic.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
So we are going to talk today about a conversation that kind of inspired us after we went to Let's Play Gaming Expo in Irving, and there's a lot of indie games there, and we were talking to the indie game developers about distributing their game and, you know, how it is getting on the market, the successes and lack of successes that they've had with distributing a game in today's day and age. Mm-hmm. And this is also off the curtails of an article that came out not too long ago when that we mentioned on the podcast a game that came out called Active Shooter on Steam that Valve eventually pulled. And then after that, they came out and basically said that we are not going to police games anymore. And instead, what they're going to basically do is that unless a game is illegal or trolling, they're just going to let everything on the store as long as you follow their distribution platform. So we want to chat about that a little bit because there's a, like, we just saw a game today called Hentai Battle Royale that released in the store. And it is literally a battle royale game that's really janky, not very good looking, that you play as hentai characters and shoot each other. And in the description, they talk about how you could play the game or you could stare at hentai girls. And the grammar was all wrong. And there was so many things about this that showcase that this was just, I think this is trolling, honestly.
It really is.
It really is. So that's kind of the setup of everything. So we want to talk about the distribution process. The issues that it faces, the current state of distribution, and then jump into how can we make it better? What are some things that we can explore to make this process better? So first part, the issue, I lay kind of the groundwork. Austin, what do you think is really the main problem with all this stuff? Like the fact that Valve's not going to regulate this stuff anymore. What do you think is caused, like, what are the issues here?
I've heard a lot of people relate this to the Apple Store and how the Apple Store isn't as good anymore. And from what people were telling me, it seemed like it was pretty easy to get in there and have a crappy game, but still, like, you know, people want to make money, so they're going to make a game. And the, like, point of entry was pretty low, at least from what I've been told. And then you were kind of saying that there's more of a point of entry in there, like a harder point of entry to get into the Apple Store. But for some reason, the Apple Store has this, like, bad karma of being a place where it's like there's a lot of shitty stuff in there.
Yeah.
And it's hard to find good stuff because of that. And it just seemed like Steam is opening that door for this to happen. Normally, I'm like a free market guy. I'm just like, yeah, let the market decide what people want. I mean, gaming is like the last free bastion of like a free, like a true free market where people, they literally, we decide things that change. We can literally change a game in a day just by outcry, you know, like that is amazing. But I don't want, I guess I want someone to curate my games for me in a way. So as much as I like the free market, I wish Steam would create more stuff like that.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, you do have to sit through and dig and find those gems in the rough, which we don't have a lot of time to do that, right?
That's so I think our job.
There's, I know, now it is our job, you know. But I think that's the problem, is there's actually a multitude of problems here, and it's hard to narrow it down, but obviously there is a problem.
Yeah.
There's bad games, people are trolling. Obviously people do illegal shit and leasing copyrighted stuff for their game and making money off of it. And then along with like how does Steam go around this and do something positive for the community, but keeping true to what they believe in. There's money involved. It's
really difficult tornado. Because with, I mean, you know, you can build a system in here where when Steam was first developed, like they could have had a system where they really heavily curate all these pieces of content. And that way, whenever like people like log on to a system, like part of your appreciation of it and the like your reasons for staying with the platform is if you're getting, you know, good value for your, well, in this case, lack of money until you spend something. But ultimately, in order for you to use said platform, you need to make sure you're getting a good value out of it. And originally, Steam's value was that it's the only place you could play Half-Life 2. And then they started adding in the ability to buy games and all this stuff. And at the time, because there wasn't a huge indie market, there wasn't as easy or as accessible to make indie games, there was quality out there because it was hard to make games. And it's still hard to make games. It's hard to make good games. It's hard to make unique games. But it's easier for anybody to just jump in and try it and put something out there. And
which is great.
It's great, yeah, like, but that's the problem that has come into play, and true. You know, Apple took the stance early on of like they have a pretty strict review system initially, but ultimately the review system is on, does your game work? Will it destroy phones? And, you know, those kinds of things. It's technical stuff. And then, like, is it coded badly? Like, is it going to... Basically, their goal is to make sure that every app that you download from the App Store is not going to drain your battery more than it should. It's not going to crash your phone in weird times or instances. It's just not going to make the Apple experience worse. But beyond that, there's no regulation of what kinds of things get out there. So it could be a super shitty game, but it works good. So that's all it needs to do. And then you pay a fee to get into the platform. With Steam, they have the ability now, they used to have the Greenlight program where it made it harder to get in because you had to have the community vote on what got in and what didn't. Now it's just like you pay $100 and you distribute your game. You set it up to where you have a Steam page and all that stuff. They monitor and review all of that. They test your game to make sure it functions. And then they release it to the store. So there's a very minor review process in how you can get into the system. So it's great because like anybody can get on here and have an attempt to get in there and play a game. But then it also allows the people that they're kind of serious, but not super serious about game development, that can put a game on there that ends up being pretty much garbage.
Still can still make money though.
And still can make some money somehow. I don't know. Yeah. Yeah. Somehow that happens.
I understand.
Yeah. So I think that's the biggest issue, is that Steam is at a point where they're flooded with stuff, and you have to like people are going to lose interest in this system because it's flooded. And then so that's Apple's latest solution, was they actually have started curating content. So when you log into the App Store, the first page that you see is for you or like what's new. Mm-hmm. And it goes through and they have editors that actually go through and are curators for mm-hmm. good stuff. So like, here's a new game that came out that they really like and they showcase that and highlight it. And if you get in that program and are like featured as one of those apps, like you're going to get a bunch of downloads because Apple brought you to the forefront. So like, they've kind of got around that problem, but still the problem exists of like, if you do a search for like puzzle game, like you're gonna get so many things out there that are just absolute trash and you have to go through each one every time.
Yeah.
And there's
yeah, there's user reviews and stuff, but still like there's still a bunch of shit out there.
Yeah.
And it's just like I wish there was a lot of more like I wish there was a standard for Steam and for Apple, which there are standards, but I think they're nothing to like really hold up to the light, you know? Like I want some higher standards from these people,
right?
From these companies, because then we'll actually like have some games. Like I don't know, putting constraints on an artist is actually a pretty positive thing, you know. Meet these requirements, and like I don't know, you know, whatever restraint is. I don't know. I guess I don't know if you can call it restraint, but I think I would call it restraint.
Yeah, constraints.
Constraints. Sorry.
Yeah.
Not restraints.
Yeah, because it makes it where you. I mean, yeah. As a designer, like from a designer standpoint, like if I don't have constraints, design's hard. It's still hard, but like putting a constraint on something allows me to be more creative with it. Like if I have no constraints on what I'm doing, I don't know how to even start. So that's having that makes it easier to kind of like start on a path down, you know, towards making this happen.
You become focused.
Yeah.
You either have that drive or you don't. You learn that pretty quickly too.
Yeah.
I just think we'd have better games if we had that for Steam.
Yeah. I think one of the things I'd like to do. So like we talked about Steam and we talked about PC and stuff like that. There is another platform out there that y'all may have heard of called itch.io, and it's an indie game platform where it only costs $10 to get on the platform, but it's a heavily curated system. So like they allow indie games on there, and some of them are that great, but they like do curate. Like if they think a game's stupid, they're just not going to put it on the store. And it also has a heavy community backing behind it. So like the things that are really good are going to get recommended higher than the other things. And there's I was looking at it earlier, and there's like some cool games on there. They don't look that great maybe, but they're play cool, or they have an interesting concept or whatever. So there's that stance that you can go with it. But I think just from a Steam standpoint, you just need to be more like allow, because anybody can release a game and find an audience themselves. They can just host it on their website and say, hey, go download this game and do it. But by getting on Steam or something like that, there's this trust factor that comes into play that I know that if I download and buy a game on Steam, I'm going to get it from a reputable source and that my money's going to be protected and I'm going to get something. But that mentality is kind of clouded now because of the fact that there is no curation on here.
Right.
So like, yeah, you know that they're not going to steal your money, but you may get a shitty game in return for that.
Right.
So I think the first step is just like increase the barrier to entry, because $100 isn't much. Like for somebody to that's making a game, like you drop $100, no big deal. Increase that to say $500 and you cut out like probably 20 or 30% of the people. Because now $500, it's like starting a company. It requires at least $500 to register an LLC so you can start, you know, setting up your business. That's a barrier to entry that not everybody can go out and do. Now, they could if they wanted to, but that's like, I mean, $500, you could buy a decent TV for that, you know? So, like, there's other things you could put that money towards that people spend time saving for. So you really have to push harder for it. So that could be one of the first steps. And then another thing I think that would be important is like having them pay to stay on there, because like your game's released, like that's what Apple does. It's like every year they charge you $100 to be on that platform. So rather than taking royalties or whatever, just like charge to like keep your program on the platform, because that means that you're going to commit to that game and keep it updated on whatever changes that come out. So like, you know, there you'll have you know, like say Windows 10 comes out and all of a sudden your game doesn't work. Well, that's a bad experience for a Steam user who goes and buys this game, downloads it, and finds out, okay, this doesn't work on my operating system. I just wasted $30.
Right, right.
Well, if they're doing a monthly fee, like you're going to be more inclined because you're paying more as time goes on to make sure that that's up to date so that you don't get booted off of there. So if that's going to happen, like Steam should boot you off because that's, you know, you're not keeping it up to date. So those are some things I think that would help to boost the, allow for better quality content, better curated content
right.
on Steam.
Right.
Because I mean, I agree with them. Like they don't have time to be, you know, like monitoring this themselves. Like they can't dedicate like 20 people to like go through these thousands of games that come out every month. But if you make it harder for them to get there in the first place,
yeah,
you have a natural system that just works itself.
Right, right.
So
I guess one of the other problems I see is, you know, video games are considered free speech. And so I can see people being like, oh, you're limiting my free speech. But at the same time, this is a company, so they can do what they want with their platform, right? It's you trying to enter their platform to get revenue of some kind and get some marketing.
Yeah.
It's literally free marketing, I would assume.
The thing with a free market is like, well, if you don't like the way the platform works, go somewhere else.
Exactly. And there's plenty of places you can do that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you have itch.io. I mean, something else would come along that will allow people to even do it for free, I'm sure, and upload their game and have this awesome experience, whatever. But positive thing is that now they're offsetting curation to other people like you and me.
Yeah.
As we can go in there, find games, you know, diamonds in the rough, and bring those to the forefront so people can see, which is a great thing. It is super positive, especially for YouTubers. I mean, that's what YouTube was made for, I feel like, for gaming.
Yeah.
It's just getting the word out there and having people with some clout to play your game and stuff. In that aspect, I think it really bolsters the community in a heavy positive way.
Like, yeah,
I can't say how good that is. Like that's really good.
Yeah, it does make it hard. I mean, if you don't have like a marketing person on your development team, like you're gonna struggle like in this market. Like even though you can get your game on there, like if you don't have somebody that markets that game well, or if you don't get somebody that picks it up and finds it and talks about it, like you're not gonna do very good. But again, there's a barrier to entry. There's no barrier to entry. So anybody can put that out there. So the hard part on our end is like, if you do a search for anything, like you're having to suddenly sift through thousands of pieces of content, 80% of those that are probably not very good. And then there's like 20 or 30% that's like really, really quality stuff. So yes, that's awesome. But like, it's still the store, the platform itself needs to be able to allow you to discover new things easier.
Right.
And they've tried to fix that. Like they have the discovery queue that they added, you know, not too long, like about a year ago or whatever it was, that based on your likes and previously purchased games and stuff like that, they'll like, you know, update you with like, here's 10 games you might be interested in looking at. So that's kind of nice.
Right. 700% of the time, those games are anything I want.
Yeah.
They're really not. Honestly, most of the games I get are probably recommended from my friends.
Yeah.
Like, was it They Are Billions, which is like not StarCraft. It's more of like a tower defense game, I guess, where you're like in a city and you have to defend the city from zombies coming out after you. But, you know, one of our guys, Luis, he's the one who recommended me to that. And I really want to get it. It's an early access. It looks great. But honestly, I think I saw that before. I just never thought of getting it.
Yeah.
Until someone was like, oh, yeah, this is a game you should look at. I'm like, okay, now I will look at it.
Well, it's looked like Hollow Knight. You know, it's another game. Like, you want to probably pick that up if it hadn't been for other people saying, like, how awesome it was.
Exactly.
Or, like, you know, curators and stuff. Like, Celeste, same thing. Like, had I not, like, heard about it and stuff like that, and I told people, like, hey, check this out. Like, that's a great game. But that game would not have had its attention that it got had it not been for people playing it that have, you know, an audience that they can share it with.
Right. I'm curious how Nintendo, what their distribution system is, because I'm sure they have higher standards.
Yeah. Nintendo and Xbox and everybody has a higher standard of distribution for sure. I think it costs more. Like, so on looking at Nintendo's website, they have their process laid out, basically a 6-step process. So you create an account, developer platform, you prepare for your Nintendo development. So you sign an NDA, you get access to SDKs, developer support, etc. You make your game. They have forms and stuff that'll help you guide through that. You prepare to sell your game so you can start preparations for release. You sign a publishing agreement, attain an age rating, submit your game for review, submit your PR materials, and then Nintendo has to approve those PR materials and everything so that they can get it on the game's page and eShop and everything like that. And then you sell it. So during that process, like, it's a simple process from like 1 through 6. But in that, all the little details behind it are really complicated because, like, your publishing agreement, like, you have to agree that there's probably X amount of money you're giving to them. There's probably a buy-in fee to get in there. There's a licensing agreement you got to deal with.
You got to get, like, test stuff for the actual Switch. I'm sure they give you a Switch.
Yeah.
They don't have one already.
Kit and stuff like that. And then also, if you're, like, designing your game for Steam, like, they probably have a different, depending on how you're coding it, like, unless you're using a generic or regular engine, like, you have to then figure out how to port it over there.
It's
a different platform that's got different, you know, configurations and stuff like that. So, like,
one of the guys we met at Let's Play Gaming Expo, he was saying that he had a custom engine built for his game. So he wants to get his game to the Switch, but that transfer is just, who knows how long that would take. What do you have
to do? It's
not
just like, oh, hey, it's Unity, click this button, it just like ports it over there.
Right.
Yeah, it's a lot more complicated. So, it is a lot harder. And same with Microsoft. Like, with Microsoft, you have to be part of their ID at Xbox program. And to get into that, that can cost a lot of money to just become a partner. Mm-hmm. And then you have to get approved. And then that's when they send you the developer kit. So there's a lot of restrictions into that scenario that makes it to where it is more curated stuff. Right. But you also get a lot less numbers in there.
Right.
So I think there's like a balancing act that needs to happen
where
like, pull a little bit of inspiration from like, how, like, there needs to be curation on one side, but I think a lot of that curation can be automated. And then at the same time, it needs to have a low enough barrier to entry that it doesn't cut out everybody. Like, paying $5,000 to get your game out there, you're not going to get the Super Meat Boys and the Fez and the Binding of Isaacs and the Shovel Knights and all that stuff won't exist.
Right.
Without like a lower barrier to entry.
But we got to think about how the industry has changed too. Like, when Shovel Knight and Super Meat Boy were coming out, like, there weren't too many indie games coming out. Like, these are like the very few. Yeah. Like, I feel like that is the wave that kind of, or that is the ripple that started the wave that, you know, indie games, or they were part of that ripple, you know, maybe it was somewhere in between somewhat, but having that. So now, since everything's so much more accessible, raising that barrier of entry, I think that's just a natural thing to do at this point. When you didn't need that before, because no one was making games, hardly anybody.
Exactly.
And those guys spent like years, day in, day out, sweating, like, you know, sweat, blood, and tears to get those games made. Now you don't even have to do that.
Yeah.
You and your buddy can just learn how to use Unity in like 3 days, and then you can have a game in, you know, 6 weeks.
Well, yeah, like one of the people I talked to there, they have a meetup group that gets together and they just do like game jams all the time to make games.
Right.
And one of the games they have was built in Unity. And he was telling me that the benefit of Unity is that their asset store is so huge, and that there's an asset store in Unreal Engine as well. But in Unreal Engine, you have to pay regularly to maintain that. With Unity, it's free up until you reach, I think you have to be making $200,000 on your game, and then there's a monthly fee that you have to pay. But like, I mean, how often, I mean, like, you have to be successful to make $200,000 on your game. So up until that point, Unity is completely free, and all the tools, all the assets, all that stuff, like, it's easy. I mean, that's so easy to jump into.
Right. And that is great because we need, like, I want younger people to have easy access into video games, and that makes it super easy. Like, a kid can jump into it. Like, video game creation is becoming a legitimate job in the marketplace. Like, it already is.
It's a multi-billion-dollar industry.
Right. Yeah. Like, that barrier of entry is just phenomenal. And I don't think any of us could imagine that 5 years ago. You know, let alone 10 years ago. What was that game like, Dreams, back in the day? It was kind of like that. Like, you can make games on it, but it wasn't anything to really talk about. I think it was on the 360. I could be wrong. Maybe it was on Steam.
I'm not sure. I know. I think I know what you're talking about.
Right. It was like a Dreams type game.
Yeah.
maybe it was a movie thing. I know they had this movie game that you could, like, allow you to make movies.
Yeah, I played that. Like,
great.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess you could argue Garry's Mod was kind of like that. You make your own game on it.
Right. I think there was something, but I do not remember the name.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, I think it's difficult. I mean, it's a difficult time. Like, marketing has to be strong. But it's just, there's so much fluff out there, and I like that has to be curated. That's like really the, right. the takeaway is right. that there, and there needs have, to be something to limit all the junk. Right. And yeah.
With great prosperity comes great junk. Lots of junk.
That was like the golden quote right there.
I won't say what game this is, but there's someone that we follow and, a game that I really enjoy that I feel like is, should be more well known. It should be well off. This game is not, it's doing okay, but it's not doing well enough for these creators to make a sequel or make a different game. Like they're just like, I guess they're just borderline or just under whatever. And it sucks because there's so much trash out there. I feel like some of that trash rises up, you know, when it shouldn't. And you have some of these other developers who are like super talented and deserve to be at the top and just can't get up there because yeah. it's so flooded.
Yeah.
There's not much they can do about that, you know?
Yeah. Well, again, it goes back to like, they need somebody that's like a marketing whiz to go.
True.
To
that too. Yeah.
All these game companies, they don't have that.
No.
Like
no.
I was talking to, with Mark from House Pixel Games, and they just brought out Moan and Throne, and he said like, that's the biggest crutch that we had. Like the missing component is like having a marketing person that's just like can really push this out there really well. Because like most game developers, like they're developers. They're going to be left brain. They're very much going to be there. They might be more introverted and stuff like that. They don't have the type A personality to get out there and sell a product like hardcore and stuff like that.
Right.
So I think as the game industry gets more exposure, I honestly think this is kind of an indirect way to look at it, but I think with the introduction of esports becoming more popular, I think we're going to start seeing more people noticing that this is a really rich industry, and you're going to get those marketing people that are really talented at these things coming into the game development because they just want a piece of that pie.
Right.
And they're going to start helping these places. And like, I think like
I hope so.
Agency, like agencies,
I hope so.
I'm not going to say this cause I want to start the company, but, yeah, so that's I'm not going to mention that part. Yeah.
Well, then you have really cool like publishers like Versus Evil or Serenity Forge. Shout out to you guys.
Yeah.
Who are like helping like, okay, I really like your game. We have all the marketing and distribution and stuff like that.
Like, yeah, that's exactly
gamers
what
helping
I'm talking
gamers.
About. Yeah, they're like it's like even Finji, the Finji studio.
Finji,
you know, like
right.
their goal is they don't take hardly anything from the developers of the game, but their goal is to provide them with a platform. And it's kind of like us talking about like we eventually want to build a network of podcasts because like you can't do this alone anymore. There's Mm-mm. so many people coming out. Like you need to be able to come under the wing of something else to get that added exposure because they're going to have an existing audience for other games that they brought out in their library. Like, yeah, you might have to give a little something up, but ultimately like that's gonna be better off for you because you're going to reach more people.
Right.
And right. easier.
Different niches.
Yeah.
All working together.
It's so hard to do something from scratch. It's like, you can't reinvent the wheel anymore. The wheel's already been invented a billion
yeah.
times.
Yeah.
Now it's just a matter of finding the best possible way to get in there. And then just figuring out that little nugget of something that makes you different.
Right. I don't know why, but I got the image of like, you know, when it rains and ants are like all in the water and they have to clump together in order to survive. That's what I got. I mean, that's literally what it is. There's just so much water.
Where the hell did that come from?
I mean, that's what it is. That's a great analogy for our current industry.
Yeah. Yeah. That's funny.
Yeah.
Cool. So
that's good, man.
I don't know. I think that's all we got there. So if there's any, my question to everybody, leave in the comments, send us an email, hello@thenergamer.net. One of the things is, do you have any suggestions other than what we propose here that would make publishing indie games better? Like how can we prevent the flood that's happening in the indie market? What are some things that people could look at? Like, you know, they can pull from other industries that would be good examples to apply to this mm-hmm. to make games, one, the quality better overall, and two, allow these small smaller teams that have great games but just aren't getting seen get seen better. Let us know. Give us your thoughts, feedback, and we would love to read it and share with our community. So, yeah. And with that, that's going to conclude our discussion topic this week. So if there's a topic that you want to hear us talk about, please email us at hello@theinnergamer.net. And don't forget to check out our video clips of this segment each and every Thursday at youtube.com/innergamer. Also, if you donate $3 or more a month, you can go to patreon.com/innergamer, give us some money, and you will get the full video of this discussion each and every week.
You're listening to The Inner Gamer.
Looking forward to next week. Let's talk about our upcoming video game releases. We have one game coming out. We're entering into August. And on August 7th, we have on the PlayStation 4, PC, Xbox, and Switch, literally every single system that matters. It is Overcooked 2. Overcooked 2.
What?
Who's excited?
What does that mean? We're going to be playing it and we're going to be reviewing it here on this podcast.
We totally are. It's going to be amazing and I can't freaking wait.
And it's going to be at our meetups and people are going to want to play it.
Oh shit, yes, we could do that.
Yes, it will be a staple
at the meetups. Oh yeah.
Staple.
Yes. That is awesome.
That's weird.
I want to mention real quick, it's usually really odd that we have this podcast like right before the beginning of the month, but we don't really know what the Sony PlayStation games are going to be free for this next month, but I can tell you what the ones are going to be for Xbox. So
yes, tell me.
On the Microsoft Xbox for August, you are going to get 4 games for free, 2 of which are Xbox One. You will get... This is crazy. Are you ready for this, man?
I'm not.
Dude.
I can't praise myself enough.
Dude, Forza Horizon 2 is free. From Xbox 360, you're going to get Dead Space 3 and the Epic Mickey 2. But this is pretty huge. For August 16th through September 15th on Xbox One, you are going to get the standard edition of For Honor for free.
Really?
So you can get the entire freaking game for free only a year after it came out.
Wow.
That's pretty trippy.
I'm tripped.
Yeah, you should
literally
be
tripped.
Yeah, I might have to install it to pick it up. So that's free games coming out in August. There we have it. And with that said, that is going to wrap it up for our show this week. Be sure and check us out next Tuesday for more from your favorite game podcast. Visit theinnergamer.net for our latest episodes, blogs, videos, and social channels. If you like what you hear, please leave us a review on iTunes or tell a friend. And if you're in Fort Worth on Wednesday, August 1st, which is, if you're listening to this on Tuesday, tomorrow, come out to Fort Brewery. We will be there playing indie games. Unfortunately, we won't have Overcooked 2 yet. We'll be playing other indie games, and you should come out and check it out and play with us. It'd be great. Go to facebook.com/innergamerpodcast for more details on that event. And Austin, tell me about Patreon rewards.
Well, we have a Patreon, which is a way for you, the user, to head on over to patreon.com/innergamer or go to innergamer.net, click donate to contribute. It's a way for us, for you, our listeners, to donate to our cause in order to bring you all the great content you want to see and hear. Even $1 a month will help us keep this content coming to you every week. Plus, if you support us, we have some awesome rewards waiting for you, such as being a guest on the podcast, like Dane Basil, who has been on 2 podcasts so far, and getting exclusive content along the way. So head over to innergamer.net, click donate to contribute, become a supporter, someone who truly enjoys video games and loves hearing about them. Join us in our journey to bring you the greatest.
You've been watching The Inner Gamer. My name is Brian Oski.
I'm Austin Morales.
We'll see you next time. Bye.
I'm done with this podcast. Welcome.
Hello, Austin. Hey. Welcome.
You welcome.
Welcome to my show.
Oh.
Thanks. Thanks for coming on.
Awesome, Roush.
It's great. It's great to have you on as a guest.
Yes.
Yeah, it's awesome to see you here.
So great to be here.
I know, right? I'm just kidding. Austin's obviously a regular guest. If you haven't seen him before, then...
I'm not a guest. Yeah. I am a co-host. I'm a regular co-host. How dare you degrade me?